Okay, welcome to Animal Education Teleseminars, and today we have a very, very, very special guest, Cindy Dale, who is the author of Subtle Body, a number of books. Everybody has the list of the website and what have you, and we'll talk about some of your upcoming classes. But I want to jump in and hear about the coloring book, but before we hear all about that, I would love to actually have you tell us how you got started in this. I mean, I know that you've been basically a lifelong intuitive, but did you always have an energy job?
No, I had real people jobs
wow.
for quite a while. You know, I did. I've always been intuitive. I always heard, saw, felt, sensed. You know, that was what really initially made me so interested in chakras, and a lot of my books are about chakras, Joan, you know, was that I saw colors coming off of people when I was just a kid. So, you know, I had the questions, and later, you know, the different classes that I took in terms of therapeutic touch or hands-on healing or intuition started to answer some of the what the heck
is going
on.
Your sound cut out, guys.
I'm sorry, I can hear.
Yeah, and I can hear.
Yeah.
So, you know, when I was growing up, I didn't really, as would most of us, you know, I didn't set a goal of being an intuitive or doing energy work. There were two things I wanted to do when I grew up. I wanted to run a business, and I wanted to write books. You know, but through college, I majored in English and philosophy, but I took a lot of internships in business and had my John Molloy suit. I don't know if people remember that from a long time ago. You have a little bow tie and your pinstripe suit. And
I remember.
Yes, I was a John Molloy woman and girl, really. You know, and I worked in business and public affairs and corporate social responsibility. I, at an early age, was actually teaching corporate social responsibility through the university here in town and running an internship program. And, you know, I just thought, gosh, I'm just going to sail to the top of public affairs and be this really great ethical businesswoman and run my own regular person business. And my intuition just kept interfering, to be honest. So I took classes, and then really I was guided every step of the way. I mean, literally a voice would come in and say, take this class. So I would take that class. And then it's like, give readings to people. Then I would do that. And then teach a class, and then I would teach the class. And then write this book, and I wrote this book. And so I was pulled through the eye of the camel, more or less, so that the books that I have written to date anyway are nonfiction, about energy, and the business I run is intuitive healing, energy medicine, and so I did meet my goals, but I had no idea that it would be in a field like this. Well, the field didn't exist, you know, decades ago, not unless you lived in a jungle or a desert or, you know, you happened to be in an indigenous population with shamans.
Right,
so,
you were a medicine woman.
That's right, you were a medicine woman, and we didn't really have those. You know, when I was choosing my career, when I was a teenager and in my early 20s. So I believe that, I'm sure you found that too, Joan, that your calling calls you. And it can either grab you and pull you kind of through the fence or kick you from behind or sit
mine
you down and not let you do anything else. But
yeah,
there
mine
you
was
are.
An anvil on my head, I feel like.
Yeah, I know, see.
I had many opportunities, but it took a while for it to take.
Yeah, and, you know, we talked a little bit initially. My youngest son is 16, 17, and he's really clear about what he wants to do. And I also know that all of that will evolve as it does for all of us. I think no matter what age we are or what stage we're in our career, you know, to some extent I'm redoing my goals, you know, even now in my 50s, I still am kind of redesigning what I want to see in my life. So it's really exciting, I think, to keep, what's the current word, keep repurposing ourselves.
Yeah, yeah, hitting refresh.
I like that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and it's funny because I think when I was little, I saw myself having horses, but I thought I would write plays and be performing them, and I guess in a weird way I get on stage with my own words, but and I have the horses.
And you have the horses, see?
And the dogs and the cat, yeah.
I wanted to write plays too. In fact, I did. I would write plays and put them on in the neighborhood and
That's
charge, you know, what seemed like a lot of money to me back then for the neighbors to come. So I thought, this is a great way to make a living.
That is exactly what I did. And then I tried to sell the bad script I had just performed. And all of it was to pay for a horse.
When did you get your first horse?
You know what? I actually, this is funny. So when I was 7, I had this little club, and we made these plays, and we, you know, tried to get people to buy the bad script. And that year, I won my first horse in a raffle.
Oh,
and,
my.
Yeah, and I kept telling my mom the day of the raffle, I was like, that's my horse. And she's like, oh, honey, no, we have tickets, we have chances to win the horse. But, you know, a lot of people have a chance at winning the horse. Like, yeah, that's fine, that's my horse. So that's how it all got started.
There you go, drop-kicked right into it in a wonderfully glorious way, too, may I add.
Yeah. But, so I love that you, I can't wait to tell one of my really good friends who's like the most intuitive corporate person I've ever met, because she's same thing, you know, she's struggling with it, but she's still in the middle of the corporate world. But I love for people to hear how people got started, because so many of the people listening to the call right now and who will listen to the call later are people that have come to it with a different background. As a matter of fact, I know we've got an engineer on the call. We've got quite a few different people. And it's what's fun, and I'm sure you find this too with your students, that when you have people with all these different backgrounds, it just makes for such a rich learning experience for everybody.
Yeah, it does. It does. And most of my students, many of them, you know, work as healers or intuitives or mediums, but a lot of them are you know, kind of quite rooted in the corporate world as well, accountant and doctor, and I'm just thinking of one of my current programs, therapist, engineer. I think that's fantastic, because those are all just lenses on reality, you know, and, you know, to even approach, you know, the word I usually use these days or term is energy medicine, whatever we want to call it, you know, that which is in the healing arts, you know, these are all beautiful lens with which to look at what we're doing. You know, I study a lot of quantum physics, you know, as much as I can study it and understand it. Sometimes I think I fake it a lot, but, you know, but it's yet another way to explain this greater mystery that I think all of us are committed to unfolding, too.
Yeah, I think, and I think it's going to be great if some of these people stay in those jobs with this knowledge and then bring light to it.
Absolutely.
In that world, yeah.
Yeah.
So how did you get so fascinated with chakras in particular?
Well, you know, the word was not in my vocabulary growing up. I mean, there were words in my vocabulary like Lutheran, Norwegian, Lutefisk.
Very Minneapolis.
Very Minneapolis languagings and words. But I really did see colors coming off people. Some of them weren't actually, now that I have learned about chakras, they weren't really, you know, kind of fixated on the chakras. They might have been about the fields, the auric fields around the body. You know, but when my dad was in a bad mood, he would be red. You know, right before my mom would get mad, there'd be this black energy coming out of certain parts of her. And so I literally started to gauge other people's moods and therefore became a very early, what I call energetic codependent, you know, based on the colors that I saw in or around people, as well as the spirits, the types of spirits that I saw around them, and that even if they were unknowingly engaging with those spirits I saw were engaging with them. You know, so the darker ones weren't as nice. The lighter ones, you know, we might have half a chance here at everybody staying in a good mood. And so I didn't even know what a chakra was until I took a class. I can't remember how old I was, 26, 27. I'd done quite a bit of traveling before then, you know, and been able to meet different medicine people and shamans and herbalists, and just it was just an interest of mine. But I took my very first healing class. Back then, it was called Therapeutic Touch. It was a Krieger method. Now that's really Healing Touch. Mm-hmm. And the teacher introduced chakras. And I remember where we took the class. It was in the basement of a bed and breakfast. And this particular woman who let the teacher host the class said, "Now, don't let anybody know that you're doing this in my B&B. You have to keep this a secret." Because it was so weird back then. It was so woo, you know, and not totally normal in the upper middle class area that we were taking this class in. But when the teacher taught me about chakras and the related energetic fields around the body, I thought, that's what I've been seeing. I can see those in people. And all of it made sense. It just tied together my perceptions as a child, especially, you know, the colors and what the colors meant, because pretty much to the one, the colors, you know, that and the meanings of them that were ascribed in the chakra system, you know, back then it was mainly Rosalind Breyer and Valerie Hunt and some of the early researchers who really kind of put it together in a westernized way. They all meant something to me. It all clicked and made sense. So it also then made sense for me to do some deeper dive in the chakras, not only through studying and attending the seminars I could find, you know, and also working with people as I traveled, Joan, but I also started experimenting on my own. And, you know, everybody just taught seven chakras back then, and I saw other chakras. Even as a child, I saw more than seven, and they weren't all in the body. So that led me to write about more of an expanded chakra system, which really only, you know, kind of probably in the last, I don't know, I'm guessing, but 10 years of people kind of because of the internet really been open to thinking about a numerical system different than seven in relation to the chakras. And I don't really care how many there are, to be really honest. I just think different cultures approach it different ways, and that's really the important takeaway about that.
It's funny because we have kind of a parallel experience. I have a degree in theater, and so I lived in New York and then L.A., and I should have been doing all the, you know, following through on studying acting, but I was at, like, Rosalind Breyer's class or Valerie Hunt's class.
Right.
So, and Valerie Hunt, actually, the energy work that I do, the scalar wave, was created by Valerie Hunt after working with Rosalind Breyer. And
yeah. That's cool work. I don't know it well, but I'm fascinated by it.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's funny that they were my origins too, but I was still a hobby.
Right, right. And mine was until I was about 28, at 29, somewhere around there, and I was working in corporate, a nonprofit at the time, doing fundraising, and I literally heard a voice at night say, "Quit your job and start your own business." And I thought, you can't support yourself doing this. What am I going to do? So I also started a consulting business to help fundraising, which, of course, never went anywhere. And it's providing sessions and teaching people that opened up.
Wow.
So well, I did listen.
Yeah, that's good. You were quicker than me.
I don't know.
Did you? So when you work, so you started out doing intuitive sessions and healing, and you started seeing the energy field. And what sort of things, how would you know if somebody was really blocked?
You know, that's a great question, because I really believe that there's many different forms of intuition, and in my very kind of systematic way, it just helps in an organizational sort of flow. I connect the different forms of intuition to the different chakras. And so when I actually work with somebody, I use, you know, kind of a couple really simple boundary and protection techniques that keep me open but also very safe. And so I use all forms of intuition. They are all at least accessible for a session at the same time. So it's a long way to answer how do I know when somebody's blocked. Sometimes I'll get an image in my head. Sometimes I'll actually hear a word that says age 4. You know, something happened when this person was age 4. That's where you need to go and focus. Sometimes I feel it because the lower chakras are much more physical and empathic. You know, and mainly most of us are empathic, you know, and it's great when we get the song and dance of the verbal and or the visual, but, you know, mostly we function very kinesthetically or empathically. So sometimes I feel their block. Sometimes I'm working with a client and I'll literally go, gosh, and I'm probably on the phone with them. I usually work on the phone and I'll go, your neck hurts, doesn't it? And they'll go, oh my gosh, my neck really hurts. And I'll go, well, that might be where we want to start. So I let the information come to me however it's supposed to. And to me, the key with that, so that I'm not absorbing it, I'm huge on boundaries because I was one of these kids who absorbed everything. I mean, everybody's illnesses, everybody's allergies, everybody's emotions, everybody's problems, everybody's like whatever it could be. And so I've had to work really hard, both psychologically and energetically, to be separate, you know, and yet be kind and compassionate and available. So I let the information register within me, but I don't really take it on, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, we talk about that. That's one of the key things that I make sure these guys understand, because I think a lot of us were, you know, big mergers.
Yeah, that's a great word.
We didn't know it. And then we have animals that merge with us, and it's like, okay, you have to be in the bubble and be the little dog over there because I need your dog energy and I'll deal with my grief or I'll deal with my...
Oh, yeah. You know, and I have, you know, lived with many companion animals. I don't typically work with them like all of you do, you know, but I do absolutely know that they're great absorbers of my stuff. I remember... You know, one day when they were both my dogs were throwing up, and there was absolutely no conceivable reason, and I was a little nauseous, you know, and of course my girlfriend said, so what are they clearing for you? You may want to take a look at and help them out a little bit. So, and of course it was, you know, my own toxicity that I had to clear.
I had a cat when I lived in L.A. and I was going to move up to Seattle, and I was calling all these places to see if I could rent a place. Every time I would get on the phone and I'd say, and do you take cats? And they would say no, and it's not like she could hear it, but she would just walk by and throw up. Oh, no. Look, I promise I'm not getting a place without you.
Right. They are perfectly delightful, aren't they?
And
yeah. They're just absolutely so clear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, you know, I think that it's, I love that you're talking about boundaries and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So when you work with people, do you work with do you help them clear their chakras? Do you clear their energy field, or do you teach them how to do it?
Yeah, you know, I use a couple really simple techniques, and they've come to me over the years. They sound so simple, I'm almost embarrassed. And one I call spirit to spirit, which is really how I open everything, and I even use it in my everyday life. And it's just acknowledging my spirit, the greater spirit of the other person and or the helpers, and then I call on the greater spirit. And so that first of the two techniques really sets it up for people, you know, that I'm just going to receive the information that's really, you know, kind of divinely ordained for me to get. And it, you know, it illuminates for them what they're supposed to know or get while we're working. And the second technique I use I call healing streams of grace. And I don't actually do a thing for a client. I mean, information comes to me through that first of the two steps. You know, if I'm supposed to know something and share it with them, I get it, however it's supposed to come. You know, I'll get information, I'll get guidance, I'll get input, I'll get something to suggest. So I'm really being the intuitive faculty, if you would, there. But in terms of doing any healing, you know, I always call for, you know, kind of the guidance for God, whatever word people are comfortable with, to send the person or the animal or the deceased or whoever and whatever it might be, you know, the streams of energy that they need, you know, kind of that are ordained for them, you know, to help them. And so I'm actually not implementing any healing. Really, truly, the right energy comes straight to them. And then it's really up to them. I mean, I'm there and present, but it's not contingent on or dependent on me, you know, what's going to happen or what's going to clear. I very typically will see people's chakras intuitively or sense what's going on with them. Just as frequently I see their energy field. But I get some straight up just visions sometimes. I mean, somebody may pose, you know, kind of a question, and I will literally just hear or see whatever it is that needs to kick off an exchange or a healing process. So, for instance, one woman called me a few years ago, and she said her issue was that she was really, really mad at her child's school. Her child was 4 at that time, because they kept carding all the parents, you know, before they would let them pick up their child. Well, you know what's been going on in school these days. So the school was being really careful. They didn't want to just let anybody in.
Right.
And she was suing the school system, which made no sense to me. Like,
yeah.
Look, it's just safety. And so I'm listening to her. Honestly, she's so upset that there's energy coming off of her. I probably couldn't have gotten close to it if I tried. So I used the spirit-to-spirit. You know, what is it I'm supposed to know for her higher well-being? And all that happened is I heard in my head, ask her what happened to her when she was 4. So literally, I heard that in my head. That's all I did. It's not anything brilliant. That's what I was told to do. So I did it. And she started crying because she had been abused when she was 4. So that was what was really coming up for her, is that she wasn't kept safe. And so she has all these, you know, resistances to some extent to the school system, you know, keeping her child safe. So the information may come any way at all, you know, any which way. I use the chakra knowledge because it helps me really pinpoint, you know, kind of the meaning of some of the pictures or the colors, and it gives me a really good starting point. So, you know, if somebody has a stomach ache, I'm probably going to look at the third chakra. You know, if I'm not getting anything else, I'm going to go, what's happening with their third chakra? And it's a great way to open the door to see what's going on and where we may want to focus.
That's great. Hey, if everybody who's not, when we do question and answer, if you can go ahead and unmute, but please, everybody, make sure that you're muted for now. Okay, somebody's on TV. can everybody mute, please? Okay.
There, that's quieter. That's great.
Yeah.
Thanks, Joan.
Yeah. So when you are working with people, mm-hmm. and you have, do they feel a big shift afterwards, or are they more? Do they have a big awareness?
Mm-hmm.
How does what
mm-hmm.
happens for them?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Typically during the session, they'll have either a eureka, you know, like an aha, like, oh my stars, that's why this has been happening. Or that's what caused this pattern. I look for causal. I look for what's underneath patterns. And I like to help clarify what created a pattern, but I don't like stopping there. I like to open up the healthy energy, the wellness energy, the more appropriate and helpful belief, you know, the bigger and better idea, whatever word you want to use. To me, both have to occur for there to be a real shift. And so either people get a huge eureka, or they actually will get an energetic shift. I've had people, whether it's, again, it's on the phone or in person, it makes absolutely no difference. You know, I'm thinking of earlier this week, I had a couple clients in, and this one woman, we were just, you know, talking about a work situation, and I said, you know, and clarified something for her, and she started coughing, she turned purple, she started shaking, she released a huge kind of packet of grief from childhood that had always inhibited her, so she actually had a very physical reaction. And I'll have people get physical shifts over the phone as well. You know, they'll say, oh my gosh, my shoulder's moving back into place, or my spine is changing. Because I use the technique I call healing streams of grace, where I am not the healer, I'm just being the human heart, you know, it cares about this person, is providing insight, and kind of helping to hook them up to a source of healing, their healing will continue. I frequently have people tell me, my stars, I kept changing for weeks, or I had dreams for a month, or, you know, the illness disappeared within a week, or, you know, a month later I went in and my blood counts were normal. And I love those stories because, first of all, it really isn't about me. You know, it's about my clients. It's about them. I don't like to create dependencies.
Yeah.
And I'm uncomfortable with them, and I think they're uncomfortable and ought to be for other people as well. It doesn't mean I don't work with people in a consistent basis, but constantly, you know, I really want to support their opening and their level, you know, of self-respect and self-responsibility, and for them to know there's a lot of invisible help for them. I mean, I'm one of these people, and everybody kind of has to find, I think, their own comfort zone with this, but I really do believe they're guides. I really do believe that there's helpers. I really do believe there's spirit, you know, and I'm thrilled when people kind of get to recognize that there's a lot of help for them, regardless of what people are around.
You know, that was
that
my
cool?
next question. Yeah, that was, you started tracking my next question.
We're so good.
Yeah. So I would love to. So when you walk into a situation, whether you pick up the phone or you mm-hmm. have somebody in front of you, mm-hmm. Do you have your own guides that come, and then do they have theirs, and is there a big party? Tell us about
right.
what goes on.
Well, the first thing I do is affirm, you know, kind of my greater self, their greater self. And I always go first to God. Again, people can use their own word for it. You know, I always invoke the Holy Spirit, the greater spirit, spirit, God. And I tell people I do that, but I'm not channeling God. You know, it's not like I've got the direct connect. I simply hold my energy and ask for that level of help. You know, kind of I try to go to the top, and then mm-hmm. I ask the guy at the top, the gal at the top, to send me the guidance that's going to be helpful for me and my client. And I don't leave myself out of the quotient, you know, because if there's some very disturbing element or spirit or being, you know, that's going to be negative toward my person, I don't want to tap into that person. You know, I need to remain healthy through the process, and so does my client. So typically, you know, kind of I go top down, and then whatever guidance does show up, that's what I pay attention to. And it is really interesting because sometimes I track, like, who's talking. So most of the time, like, I have one particular guide that shows up a lot for me, and sometimes it's an archangel, and sometimes, you know, he shows up to help me with the session, you know, or tell me things. But very frequently, I then am tapping into the other person's higher guides because they know that person the best. So sometimes it's funny because they'll tattletale a little bit. Like they'll say, they'll like kind of maybe whisper in my ear something really silly like, grape jelly. Right, like, why am I supposed to talk about grape jelly? This makes no sense. And all that's really happening is they're giving me a clue, you know, that I'm supposed to say grape jelly because they're there every day watching their client eat grape jelly. There may be nothing wrong with the person eating grape jelly. It may have nothing to do with anything, except it's a way to establish some kind of proof, you know, that there
yeah.
really is a being that's shown up that you know, kind of knows the client. So it
yeah.
gives some instant credibility to the process. So I think typically it's their helpers who show up.
Yeah. And you know what? I think somebody else is still not muted. I don't know. It sounds like you're cleaning out a drawer. If you could please, if everybody could mute, make sure you're muted if you're going to not be sitting and listening. When you say that there's other beings that come into the room, do you think that people have other attachments, say, negative, and I don't like the word negative, but we'll just the word negative entities or negative beings that follow people or animals.
Absolutely. And I think it's both for people and for animals, and even for locations. There can be, you know, kind of, I use different terms too. There's not a real good term. Sometimes clinically I use the word interference or dark forces. You know, you could always say demons or jinn or this or that culturally. I absolutely know that there are those forms of interference. And I would even say that probably 50% of the sessions I do, especially when I'm initially working with somebody, something like that is present. And it doesn't mean that it's a bad person. It doesn't mean that there's something, you know, kind of darkly, you know, kind of lit, if you would, about an animal or a person. You know, it just means that they have hanger-oners that could be ancestral. They might be the deceased. Sometimes it's living people, you know, and you're just kind of picking up on the souls that are kind of vampirizing. Sometimes there's entities or beings that follow somebody lifetime to lifetime. I have a lot of mainstream clients. Many, many of them are accountants, homemakers, you know, mechanical engineers, what have you. But I tend to be able to pretty clearly and easily feel or see or sense if there's interference. And if when I bring it up, I have yet to have a person argue with me. In 20-some, however long I've been doing this, 25 years or 20 years, or I lose track, but 25 at least, I've yet to have somebody say, are you making that up, or I think that's weird, or there's just you're just insane. Almost everybody says, I felt like there was something, or I knew it. And we might phrase it like there's a curse or a presence or a ghost. People may have their own language, but I really can't think of somebody who slammed down the phone or argued. They typically can feel it. And when I'm working with somebody, sometimes that's initially anyway, sometimes the most important part of starting up a session, you know, is if their guides show up. Once in a while, there's like a tricky one that shows up. There's like a tricky being, you know, that's like in the corner, or with my physical eyes, I may see a dark flash, or I may smell something, or get a creepy feeling, or get really chilled, or cold, or really hot. And so I find that some of these kind of characters, they're not all, you know, some of them go to rehab and turn out just fine, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but some of the darkest ones or the most malignant ones are very tricky, and they can visually present as really sweet or really nice or really light, you know, or like they're the best friend of the client. So that's probably one of the trickiest parts of my work, you know, is making sure that everything that shows up, you know, is really kind of what it's supposed to be. And for me, I have to be really responsible in following any clues or cues that might tell me that something that is there isn't, you know, kind of what, it's not helpful. It's maybe even harmful.
And I think even thought forms can become their own entities.
Absolutely. So it's an energy. Yes.
Yeah.
A thought form very much dwells, you know, around somebody or sometimes in somebody. And you're exactly right. It can be its own consciousness after a while.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so do you work a lot with past lives?
Mm-hmm. I don't look for a past life. You know, if somebody shows up, I don't immediately go, let's look for their past lives. And people don't usually ask for it either, you know, that way. They more ask, you know, about purpose or a situation or an illness or, you know, a relationship or something. But if a past life unfolds for me, I start there or I go there. So, because again, you're going to work causally. And so, Joan, sometimes I look for past lives. Sometimes they're really long time ago, like not on this planet. And sometimes they're even what might come in is even an in-between lifetime, you know, kind of between incarnations. So I have to be really open to whatever shows up and present it, you know, and then, of course, you know, kind of check that my client's okay with it. You know, years and years ago when I was first starting, I had a gentleman come in, and he was a big-time VP of a large corporation. And I could tell he was very uncomfortable coming to someone like me. He wouldn't tell me a word. He wouldn't tell me who he was. He wouldn't say anything. So I'm feeling very foolish. I don't know what to do. You're right. I mean, I still get like that sometimes. I don't know if we ever get over that completely.
I know. When I have to talk to an Olympic rider's horse, I'm thinking, oh, my God.
And I know.
You know this horse.
You get nervous. You're nervous.
Yes.
And so the only thing I could get was a past life. And I'm going, I don't want to bring this up. This guy's like a businessman. So I said, you know, the only thing I'm getting is a past life. It's okay if you don't believe in past lives. Just take it as a theme, as a metaphor for explaining what might be happening in your life. And I proceeded to talk about him as being this chief of a tribe, and he had one wife, but then he took another one who was a concubine, and his mother was really mad at it, and then his mother passed over and, you know, kind of was here today trying to give him a message, and I gave him the message, and it became this huge, convoluted drama. Talk about, like, you know, like as if I'm delivering, you know, the lines of a play. And he looked at me, and he turned off the tape recorder, and he goes, "Who told you?" I go, "Who told me what? I don't know your name. You wouldn't even give me your real name." And he goes, "Well, this is what's happening in my life right now, including that my mother has passed, and she keeps showing up to me in dreams. And she's the one who told me to come to you." So it's sometimes
that's awesome.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
I know. It's super, super cool. So I just go with whatever I'm given, because I really do try to hold myself in, you know, my energy in the best possible way. And I do usually tell people, especially new people, before we start, I say, look, I'm not channeling God. This is just my intuition. It can be flawed. You know, I use different lines to reassure the person, you know, that they don't have to take all this in. And I borrow from the 12-step program, and I say, you know, take what you want and leave the rest. This is just, you know, like another way of looking at reality. This isn't the only truth. It's just meant to give you another perspective. So I find it really important to let people know they're in charge of what they do with the information. You know, it's not about me, because I'm, of course, going to get some things imperfectly or, you know, kind of not exactly right.
That's really great. When you're teaching, what are you teaching people how to see in this way, or how to feel in this way, how to see or feel chakras? And
I love teaching. I mean, you do too. It's so fun. And so I like to teach longer term classes rather than shorter, because you can develop kind of a rhythm and get to know people and find out what's interesting to each person or what they need to know. So, for instance, I teach at a local college, and I teach a 7-part series, 7 Saturdays through the school year, and people earn a certificate, which is fantastic and a really cool thing for a college to do. And so, you know, I like to impart information because I'm an information junkie. That's why all my books are way too big. I love research and explaining and data, you know, because I think the mind is an okay thing. You know, we don't need to ridicule the mind. It's okay to understand something. It decreases fear and increases our ability to be self-protective, you know, if we know information. So I like to impart a lot of information, and I teach both energy and intuition fairly systematically. I do link it back to the chakras and the subtle energy anatomy, you know, and how subtle energy works, how it is exchanged, how it flows through the body, how we pick it up, how we send it out. You know, so I like to people to have a really good understanding of the intuitive processes. And then I like to help people really develop their particular abilities. So, again, most of the gifts are empathic. Most of them are feeling, getting emotions, physicality, sensing things, becoming aware of things, just knowing things, you know, and so I give them different ways to work that way. I help people learn how to do the verbal in the way that really works for them. You know, hear things or read. You know, you can just give information, you know, in your everyday life. You read a license plate, and that's visual and verbal. And I love teaching the visual, you know, and really helping people expand, you know, their way to be clairvoyant, because sometimes it's all about seeing the pictures. Sometimes people don't realize they are clairvoyant because they're just getting a sense and they need to put it into a picture form. Sometimes people read words in their mind. Sometimes visuals come to people as symbols. Sometimes they just get shades of white and gray and black, and they're using a different chakra than the typical one when they're doing it. So I like to get in-depth and really help people understand the hows of these things, the science, the spiritual hows, the mechanics, you know, and then really figure out what works for them individually.
That's very, 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 very similar to how and what I teach.
Is this fun? Don't you love it?
Yeah, because it's the same when people get the information from the animals. It's like sometimes they get it, they hear words, and then, you know, it's like getting them to see that they can see pictures. And
And, you know, I know for me with my animals, I don't get words in my head from them, and I can sometimes around people, but I certainly get their feelings. Like, I have a talker. My dog, Honey, who's now two, is a talker. I mean, literally, he just talks. I mean, he had mouth surgery when he was 6 months old. He talked the entire 2.5 hours, like, that he was under. But Honey's a returner. In my ex-husband's family, they had a male golden retriever named Honey. And so even though my ex and I were divorced, when my son was like 3 and 4 and I was getting a dog, his, you know, Michael, the father, called me and said, would you mind getting a male golden retriever and naming it Honey so that he can stay in the family? So that's what I did. So I'm positive the Honey that we got was the other Honey, right, returned. And then when Honey the second died very unexpectedly, you know, a few years ago, it was very tragic, very traumatic, very painful for my son and, you know, for me. You know, I heard after he died he'll come back, but of course I didn't know when. So, you know, a little over 2 years ago, I'm sleeping, like, and all I want to do is sleep. When I'm sleeping, I don't want anyone talking to me. And a guide talked in my head and said, Honey's coming back. I thought, I don't know if I want a puppy. I was like, oh, my stars. I already had a yellow lab, and I was like, I don't know if I can do a puppy. The next morning, Gabe flies in my room. He's my son. He goes, Mom, you know, I had this, like, feeling, and I looked at the Internet, and I think there's a puppy who we need to get. And I'm like, that hadn't happened, and Honey had been dead for 3 years. So it was a little golden retriever through a website named Tank. I thought, what are the chances Tank is Honey? Well, darned it. Everywhere Gabe and I went, we saw tanks. Sherman tanks, toilet tanks. I even had Honey delivered to my house from Amazon. I never ordered.
Funny.
Oh, yeah. And so then I met my therapist, right? And I'm complaining. I'm going, I just need one more sign before I get Tank. And I walk out of her office. This is like a big people office, you know, a real office, like with, you know, business people in it. And this dog walks up to me, no person, with a leash and hands me the leash. I thought, okay, I'll get Honey. So, of course, and you must see this too, the first few weeks, if not months, we had Honey, that Honey the third went through every single trauma that had killed or made us, like, put down Honey the second. Same place. Yeah, we went through all of it. I had to go to the same vet, get the same emergency room. We had to play it all out. So, you know, that was the same soul.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. And he's much more talkative than he was the first time.
That's really cute. I have a returner cat.
Do you?
Yeah, and I have a returner horse.
Wow.
Also.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So,
it's just a different relationship. Already established to some extent. Mhm.
Yeah, it's great.
It is great.
All right, well, I know I have loved this, and I would love to open up and see if anyone has questions. Everyone's being shy.
You guys can ask anything. It really, no matter what.
Linda Parks, did you get on the call?
Yes, I'm here.
I thought you were. Yeah. I figured you'd at least have some questions.
I was just I don't have one yet, but I will come up with one.
Okay. Linda's our former scientist.
Cool.
Recovering.
Cool.
She's still a scientist.
Recovering, yes.
Yeah.
Good. Hi, Linda.
Hi. This has been fascinating.
Yeah.
I have a question.
Yes, Caroline.
Hi. Could you just talk a little bit more about how you protect yourself from other people, you know, emotions of other people, and how to say to brush that off after a reading?
Absolutely. Yep. I really do use those two techniques all the time. So before I work with somebody, but before I even go into my day, you know, kind of as a real life person, you know, I use spirit to spirit. And I affirm my spirit, I affirm the spirit of the other person or of the helping spirits, and I call on the greater spirit. And I find that solidifies, that act alone solidifies my personal boundaries and separates me and says only that which is highest is going to happen. The second technique that I use consistently is I surround myself with what I call healing streams of grace. I don't get so particular, Caroline, that I figure out if they're purple or pink or blue or striped or polka dotted or whatever. I literally ask spirit to just, you know, like if I'm going to work with somebody, to surround me with healing streams of grace so that I'm buffered. And then when I'm done with somebody, I ask for healing streams of grace to go through my field and to cleanse me of anything I may have inadvertently or unconsciously picked up. The other thing that I do, and this is really useful for me, is I, you know, the term grounding is, you know, always taught. And I technically don't ground in earth energy. I believe there's many different elements. You know, we have stone, we have wood, we have earth, air, water, fire, you know, light, sound, star, you know, anything, wood, whatever it might be. And so I found that when everybody was teaching me to ground in earth, I felt like I was like 6 feet under and like choking. I couldn't stand it. It terrified me. So I was never grounded. I literally would just kind of float around because I was so scared to ground into earth. It didn't feel good to me, you know, to have my energy center, if you would, you know, bringing in and you know, being cleansed only by the earth element. And so as soon as I switched to air, I am happy as a lark. I mean, so to me, grounding isn't just about your connection to what's underneath you. You know, it's like what element or set of elements you're allowing into your field to clean you, replenish you, nourish you, you know, and, you know, kind of et cetera, what relationship you're mainly, you know, going to hold elementally. And so I primarily use air, and I don't pick people's stuff up hardly ever. Because I work with the element that really is acclimated to me, you know, rather than the one that way back when I was taught to ground in. So do a little experimenting, you know, as well, and see if there's some other kinds of elements, you know, that might be helpful for you. And in my office, I am very kinesthetic. My office is just full of all kinds of super cool things. I think they're super cool, you know, but they're all there, you know, to kind of really support my physical body, you know, because it is really draining to work intuitively, you know, if you're not nourishing yourself while you're working with somebody. It can be very draining. So I like to work, if I'm on the phone, I walk while I'm on the phone because I'm very, very kinesthetic and physical, and I don't take people's energies on if I'm moving. And if somebody's working with me, I'm down in my office. It looks like a little kiva with all this, like, super cool stuff I've found in other parts of the world. And all that stuff is really here on purpose because it's very nourishing and protective. Like, I literally have a machete in here. It's not a steel machete. It's a wooden machete. Mm-hmm. You know, and I have a lightning rod. And I took the sharp part out so that when my son was little, he wouldn't kill somebody with it. You know, but everything is set up in here, you know, for protection for me and the client as well.
You know, I love that you said that about the other elements, and I want to just point out one thing, Caroline. You know, in the energy, both in the scalar wave work and in the when we do the meditation before we talk to animals, yeah, I always talk about breathing into the bottom of your feet because I don't know some people don't need to be more grounded or, you know, that
mm-hmm.
same thing, being swallowed
mm-hmm.
by the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And then even on the, I take people every June on dolphin trips. And
cool.
We're on a boat in metal, you know, we're in metal
mm-hmm.
in water. And so it's a long ways down to the sand. So it's like
mm-hmm.
you have to be able to ground within your
mm-hmm.
body with whatever it is that is grounding for you. And it may
right.
not be the same as me.
It makes a huge difference to really personalize to yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
And, yeah, that's great. It made me
Thank
wonder
you.
Then, Cindy, what sign are you?
I'm actually a Taurus. Isn't that goofy, which is an earth sign?
No, it makes a lot of sense because you don't need to be more grounded.
No, I don't. I, you know, and I'm kind of, frankly, one of the most practical people that there are. I mean, I am. People think because I do what I do for a living, like somehow I have no, you know, kind of brain or common sense either. But I'm a real believer in common sense and cleaning your house and, you know what I mean?
Just, yeah.
Yeah. Running your dogs. That's a great meditation right there.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Mm-hmm. I don't need more earth. You're right. I've got enough.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well, Caroline, that was a great question.
It was beautiful. Thank you.
Anybody else?
This is Linda. I now have my question.
Yay!
well, I was really struck early when you were speaking about that there's many different forms of intuition and
yeah.
That you connect those different forms to different chakras.
Yeah.
And I wondered, you said, you sort of, I believe, made the connection, one of the connections, and maybe there's more, which is really my question, that the lower chakras, you may feel things more, and
uh-huh.
the upper chakras, you may see or hear.
Mm-hmm.
But I wondered if you could just expand on that in terms of different forms of intuition and their connection to different chakras.
Absolutely. And I work with a 12 chakra system. So, you know, we'll just count different than other systems. For me, the first chakra, of course, is in the same place as everybody's. That's very physical, so I call that the center of physical empathy in terms of intuition. That's where you feel physically in your body what might be going on, you know, in others' bodies. And that those others' bodies could be a plant, you know, or an animal, you know, as well as a person, or even a deceased being as well. The second chakra in the abdomen is the emotional center. And so people with this gift tend to be very feeling sensitive, you know, that Barry Manilow song, feelings, I mean, overly so as well, and or can be really creative. So both of those sorts of ways of being exist here. The third chakra, which is in the solar plexus, is the mental center. That's the gut instinct. That's the one where people just know facts or information without really knowing how they know it. And that can be a very frustrating gift to have. I find a lot of people going, well, how can I just tell somebody I know that this is what's going to happen or should be, or that this is what they're really going through? Because you tend not to be able to prove what you are getting factually, mentally, in through that chakra. Heart is healing. You know, heart's very relational, and it's very much about healing. You know, we even send healing energy sometimes through our hands. The throat is the verbal center, so that's the one where we hear, you know, or we're working with sounds or songs or, you know, kind of, you know, even hearing our own thoughts, which might be a very accurate kind of source of intuition. The third eye, the sixth chakra, is the straight-up visual center. That's where we get the colored pictures. The seventh chakra on the top of the head is a spiritual empathy center. And this is kind of a higher form of knowing or awareness. And this one, too, can be frustrating for somebody. It typically is measuring who is ethical or not, who's truthful or not, what would the divine want to have happen in a situation or not. And you can train this center to be visual. And when it is visual, it just sees, if you would, you know, by gradients of white all the way to black. So it has its own measurement. I work with an eighth chakra that's right on top of the head, and that one is really the house of the shaman self, the Akashic records. And people who are really eighth chakra people actually have all the gifts. So they can rotate between being kinesthetic, you know, verbal or visual. And they're shamans. I mean, if you're a shaman, you can actually access information from across time, you know, across planes, et cetera. Right above there, I work with a ninth chakra gift that is another empathic or kinesthetic one. And it's a very hard one to explain. It's a soul knowing. And the ninth chakra people tend to be just plain old, really good people. They're idealists, and they're able to harmonize. Their presence just brings peace. Their presence simply transmits goodness. The 10th chakra is actually underneath the ground, and all of you, by dint of who you are and what you're studying, are going to have a really strong 10th chakra. That's the naturalist chakra. That's about earth, animals, maybe cosmos, but anything that has to do with nature. It's actually technically a kinesthetic knowing, but obviously any of these can be put together. Like you can feel and sense your connection, say, to animals or trees through this, and get pictures and get verbal. The 11th chakra is really different. It's like all the way around the body. It's very kind of strong around the hands and the feet, and it's the gift of commanding. So, you know, when you read about, say, a guru pulling money out of the air, or llamas who are freezing sheets, you know, like or warming them, you know, or whatever, or Jesus walking on the water, they're literally converting physical energy, you know, into psychic, or psychic into physical, and they're commanding the movement of forces. I have met, like, a weather shaman in a different country who was able to change the weather using the commands, you know, that are technically kind of involved with the hands or the feet. And then the 12th chakra is in our outer bounds, and I love this one, and it's unique to each of us. So I believe that each of us have very unique gifts that other people don't have. And so that's the great part. That's the fun part. Like, years ago, I worked with a woman who wanted me to see what her 12th chakra gift was. And I said, you can write stories and the endings come true. And I'm like, whoa, that's super cool. And she said, I do that. She told me about two stories she had written. The only one I remember is that her friend had a little boy with leukemia. She wrote a fairy tale, and in the fairy tale, the little boy got well, and he got well. And
wow.
She's not using the gift. I mean, it breaks my heart that she's really scared of her gift. Isn't that the most cool gift? I mean, I would love to have that gift. So I do believe, of course, we're all very unique, but I like kind of following somewhat of a system because it gives us a head start on explaining ourselves to ourselves.
Wow.
I know.
That was really great.
That's a lot. Yeah. So the uniqueness that we each have, we may learn to expand some of our abilities, but really we have a uniqueness that we should maybe honor and work to increase. You know, it's not like, well, I can't see auras, but somebody else can, so why can't I? But more, what can a person, how do they connect rather than how don't they? Or
That is so lovely. That is so important because we really are completely different. You know, my 16-year-old is like a walking heart, and he just knows things about people. I don't have a word about it. I mean, he just says things that are like, wow, he just knows their truth. He knows their truth both positively and negatively, and people would never guess that. You know, he's this big 6'1" baseball player, 220-pound kid, you know, and he doesn't share most of it most of the time, but when he does say something, it's like, wow, that's like real wisdom. And, you know, I don't have a word for it. I just know he does this and always has. So we are each really, really unique. And it's so fun, I think, to give ourselves permission to get acquainted with that unique gift or set of gifts.
Thank you very much.
That was a great question, Linda. And
yeah.
That was an even better answer.
That was fun. Well, it's very uplifting, you know, to know that we're not going to be like anybody else. We're just not. Sometimes I feel, like, kind of boring. I mean, on my website, I don't even remember what it says. You know, I hate redoing websites. But it's like intuitive, healer, author, or whatever. Those are the code words. And I meet these people with these really unique, like, they can tell people's numbers, or they, you know, they talk to, I mean, literally they know where animals came from before they were on this planet or whatever it is. And, you know, I just kind of had to some extent, really, you know, get that one of my main gifts is just teaching people about their gifts, and that can be a gift. That's a gift. So
yeah, that's a huge gift.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a feeling you have a few more gifts.
Yeah, I do, but
just a guess.
But that's like really fun for me, you know, and I love seeing people come alive to who they are.
Yeah, me too. Mm-hmm. Does anyone else have any questions, comments, observations? Well, that was really, really, really fun and delicious. And I think you've left, I mean, I can hear when they're all thinking, and I think they all are processing that 12 chakra system.
I would say and savor it. And Joan, I want to say you are so cool. Every single person in your classes are incredibly lucky to be working with you. And I'm going to do more research on the scalar and the bioscalar. I have done a little bit of reading on that, just research. But my you know, when I looked at some of Dr. Hunt's, you know, newest work, it was like, this stuff works. This is like the new wave of healing right there. So everybody in your classes are really lucky to be learning that.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And thank you so much. And I hope I'd love to connect up and share stories from the trail.
Let's do that. You have my email. I'd love to do that. Yeah, I think we've been down some of the same wagon wheel trail, haven't we?
Exactly. And sometimes it's only three wheels.
I know. Or I've just sat there for a while. I've done that one, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, roasted marshmallows for a while.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you. Thank everybody.
Thank you. It was really, really great.
Thank you, Andy.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.